Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 236, recorded January 26, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello, once again. So, today we have Mike in Oregon, Google Voice messages. And Sean in North Carolina, and Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Tony in New York. And you have a couple little tidbits for us, too, before we get started, yes?
A little bit of fishy news. Yes. My water changer has finally arrived. I am very excited about that. In fact, it wasn't long after it arrived that I was able to do a water change. So I enlisted
the help of a kid.
One of our children who helped me this time. It was Laurelyn who helped me. And we changed the fish tank, the water in all the fish tanks, and it was just a breath of fresh air, a relief to be able to do that because...
Yeah, I guess a breath of fresh air for the fish, huh? Yeah.
And their water quality seemed fine. They didn't seem in any particular stress or whatever because, you know, most of the tanks have plants in them and... We've been keeping up with the changes and so on in general until recently, but they seemed fine, but it wasn't that they were in jeopardy particularly immediately, but they would have been had it been much longer, and it was nice to get it done. And it was also nice to find that the part that arrived, though it was sold for use as a waterbed drain and fill kit, was actually exactly the same part that I purchased at the pet store for, I believe it was $11.99, and then purchased it online as a waterbed drain and fill kit part for $2.04.
Yeah.
So.
Plus shipping.
Yeah.
It was like $4 or $5 shipping.
Was it $4 or $5 shipping?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, still cheaper.
Still cheaper. And it actually worked, as opposed to the one that you bought at the pet store.
Right. So, and I think the pet store one was either defective or had been
mistreated sometimes.
I think since the kids are the ones who are doing the draining and filling at the sink side, and I'm doing the draining and filling at the tank side,
I think that one was just messed up.
This one was damaged, whether it was damaged early on or it was just came defective, which is likely. All's well that ends well.
Yes.
And there are some portions of it I may be able to salvage for use in the future. It's just the bottom part that doesn't work. So the top part, all the threads and everything are fine. So I may be able to use that in the future, so I'm going to keep that around in case I need it to replace other parts. And the part, the one that came as part of the waterbed drain and fill kit also came with new washers and different things. So if I ever have a washer that's having a problem, I can replace that. Mm-hmm. It also came with some sort of solution that's good for the insides of waterbeds and is not good for aquariums. So I'm not.
So we don't need that.
What I'm going to do with that, but
we'll find somebody who still has a water bottle.
Maybe then.
Send it to the thrift store.
But I was just really excited to be able to change.
Yeah.
And listen to that lovely sound of not trickling water because of the
evaporation.
Yeah, because during the time I had to top off a bit, but I hadn't topped off for a couple of days, so you could hear the filter, you know, making noise as the water fell back into the tank. But now you can't, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And another bit of news. Fishing news.
It's kind of a story, really.
Yeah, well, went to the pet store the other day to pick up some crickets for crested gecko, but also to pick up some olive nerites, because, you know, I've had olive nerites in with my opaiula, my Hawaiian red shrimp, for years, but the nerites, you know, they last quite a long time in the opaiula tanks, but they don't last forever. So periodically I have to replace them, or we get algae on the glass. And so it was time to get a couple more. Went to the store and I said, do you have any olive nerites that are acclimated to brackish water? Because typically they have fresh salt and brackish acclimated olive nerites in their store. And so she said, well, I think we might have one olive nerite that's acclimated to brackish water in one of the brackish tanks. Let me check. So she went over there and... We went with her, actually, and she looked around and she said, oh, there's one. We found one. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to find another one. She was looking around, and I said, oh, maybe you could look behind the sponge filter. And she said, yep, that's what I was going to do next. And she moved the sponge filter, and started looking under the rock work and, you know, pulling up the rock work. And then Gwen, who was there with me at the pet store, our youngest daughter, who just turned 9, said, "There's one. I see one on the heater." And her height was just perfect so that she could see it. And she also has a good eye for such things.
She does.
So she was able to spot this near right before I did, or before the
pet store clerk,
was able to spot it and save the day, essentially. We found another Nerite, so worked out nicely.
So, but we just thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
She does have a good eye for spotting critters.
She does. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. And the store, pet store clerk complimented her also on her ability to spot it. So it was fun.
That's good.
Okay. All right, so now let's move on to our contributors. I think first we're going to move on to Mike because he's got the Google voice messages.
Okie dokie.
So let's play those Google voice messages, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the first one.
Hey, Aquara Maths, this is Mike from Oregon. Hey, I had a question run by you guys. I don't know if you remember or not, but when I purchased my 150-gallon tank for my cichlids, it came with a canister filter. Well, I've learned to really not like canister filters very much. They're an awful lot of work to change the filter cartridges and that sort of thing. And I'm also having problems getting it to prime. I can get it to prime, but it takes quite a bit of effort. I've read the owner's manual. I'm doing everything correct, and I've been on some message boards on the Internet. I read some things where I need to replace some parts and O-rings and all these different things to try to get it to work properly, and I'm just kind of at my wit's end with it. I don't really like it that much to begin with, so I'm kind of contemplating putting some hang-on-the-back filters on that tank and just doing away with the canister filter. And there's a lot of options out there, different brands and whatnot, as far as hang-on-back. Just kind of wondering what your guys' opinion was as far as which brand you prefer. I know there's BioWheels and there's, you know, all different types of hang-on-back filters, and some have varying features and that sort of thing. I'm just kind of at a loss as to which one would be the best for my situation. So if you could give me your thought on that, I would appreciate it. All right, thanks, and great show. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay, and now we'll just go into the next one, which is kind of a follow-up to that one.
It's coming. We got to load one after the other, so.
Hey, guys, this is Mike from Oregon again. Hey, I just wanted to add another thing to the message I just left you guys. As I said before, I was, you know, kind of researching the different makes and models of hang-on-the-back filters. And, you know, one of the big differences, I guess, I see out there is the BioWheel feature that the Greenland filters have. And I've been looking at message boards, and some tend to kind of poo-poo the BioWheel. I know the pet fish top guys really speak highly of it, but it seems like the consensus of people on message boards, based on what I've read, just seem to actually prefer, like, AquaClear, which doesn't have a BioWheel. Most people seem to claim that that is a superior filter to any other hang-on-back out there, and so that was, I guess, one of the other things I really wanted to kind of question you guys on is the BioWheel, is that really, is it kind of more of a gimmick, or is it really, you know, a worthwhile thing to pursue? You know, I don't know. I just kind of, like I said before, I'm kind of perplexed. There's a lot of different choices out there, so anyway, I kind of was hoping you guys would kind of touch on the whole BioWheel thing and what you guys thought of that, because anyway, okay, that's the end of my second message. Thanks again. Bye.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I think it's a great question, and we will see what we can address there. Well, first of all, I have kept used various hang-on-the-back filters, including both of the ones you mentioned by name, both BioWheel filters and AquaClear filters, as well as some others out there. And I would probably have some difficulty recalling all the brands that I've used, but I have used, you know, a number of them. Top Fin is another one that I've used. I know that. I think I've got one of those running right now, one or two of them. Anyway, some things to think about. There are some things that I really love about BioWheel filters and some things I don't love about them. And that's also the same for AquaClear. But to give you an example, on our 37-gallon tank that has goldfish in it right now, we have one AquaClear running and one BioWheel running. And we do that in an attempt to have the best of both worlds. And it really depends, for me, more on the application that you are going for than the filter itself, in terms of, not that one is always better or one is always worse, but just what do you want to accomplish with it? And I think, for example, AquaClears are good when you want to run CO2, do-it-yourself CO2 in a tank, because they don't disturb the water at the surface very much. The surface turbulence, will drive off a lot of the CO2 that you put into the water, and BioWheels create a lot of the surface turbulence at inside the filter itself, which will drive off some of the CO2. So I wouldn't recommend using a BioWheel when you're going to do that. Another thing that I like to think about is that BioWheels come with, the filter cartridges or filter pads that they come with are basically a piece of plastic with a bunch of slits in it. Piece of black plastic. It's a rectangle for most of them with a little area up at the top that's shaped to allow water flow and so on. Anyway, the plastic, and then it's got some activated carbon sandwiched between the black plastic and a piece of blue filter sheeting or blue filter pad. Those are not my favorite filter pads. And the one of the reasons being is that once you've used it for a month or so, the activated carbon can be all saturated, and you don't really want to keep that sitting there in your tank. I mean, there are differing opinions on that. Some say that if you leave it there, it will just get coated with a biofilm, and it will be more surface area for our friends, the nitrifying bacteria, which makes sense. And others say that it will start releasing some of the contaminants that it's pulled out of the water, releasing them back into the water. So I'm not sure how that works out. But you have all that carbon sitting there, and you have to do something. Eventually, because the blue filter padding gets all filled up with gunk that you need to remove. You can rinse it out a certain number of times, but it eventually gets tired and starts getting holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Something I've done is just I cut a hole in it that's about maybe 2 inches square, depending on the size of the filter pad. Cut a hole in the blue filter padding and then stuffed it with filter floss and used it again. And done that until that filter floss starts to wear out. And then take it out and put it in again. And you can make it last a lot longer that way.
So you're basically just restuffing the frame.
Restuffing the frame in a sense, but using enough of the blue filter padding to hold the new filter padding that I'm putting in there. That's one thing I've done. But anyway, that's, I think, the thing that I like least about it, is that they're typically shaped in a way that you can't use your own padding as easily as you could with some of the others. Some of the others, you just cut a piece of filter padding and put it in, you're good to go. But you have to do, for the BioWheels, you have to make some sort of accommodation. But it also depends on the model. Like some of the Emperors, they come with a media basket that you can fill with anything you want. And I've just filled those with filter floss and use those, and they're fine. Or you can get from Doctors Foster and Smith, you can get a clamshell frame that is made to fit the BioWheel, and you open it up, put in whatever you want, close it, and just slip it in, and it fits just fine. Which is now what I'm running. I bought a couple of those for the BioWheel filters we had, and just used that clamshell frame because it's completely customizable. So that basically removes that disadvantage. And I know that there's some argument about whether the BioWheel really does what it's supposed to do. And I don't have any empirical evidence either way, but I feel like, at the very least, it gives some good water movement. And the principle is sound, that if you have that surface area and a lot of oxygen, that the bacteria are going to colonize it and they're going to do what they're supposed to do. And Marineland seems to have some pretty good claims regarding, you know, what that does. And I've never really looked up the research to see what it says, but I don't know. I am inclined to think that they seem to work well, and they do a good job at keeping scum off the surface of the water, because they, you know, they really create some turbulence as it goes on the wheel and then back off into the tank. And I noticed that, you know, like a slick or an oily film on the top of the water is something that bio-wheels tend to combat pretty effectively. So I like that about them. I don't like the uplift tubes with their little gray little snap-on piece, because it always falls off. And that can be a pain. I know that what it's intended to do is to enable you to customize the filter, whether you want it to be taking water from your tank near the surface or middle of the water column and near the bottom, and that makes sense. But I just find that those little gray things pop off all the time, and they're kind of annoying. In terms of the bio-wheel ever getting clogged or not running well, I've occasionally had issues with that, but typically they'll run for years and not have any issues as long as your water quality is good and you're not getting too much scum build up because you change your, you know, the filter pads often enough. They'll go for a long time. So I like those.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99.
Aqua Clears. Something I really like about the Aqua Clear is that it, the media, depending on what you're running in your tank, if you're doing several or just picking one, are pretty good in terms of customization. You can put a lot of different things in there. And I like the big sponges that they have that you can put in. There's kind of a basket. It's like a three-sided basket, and you lift that up, and it folds down, and you can stick whatever you want in there. And I like the big sponges because they're easy to clean off, and they're easy to reuse. And I believe the instructions that come with it say you should replace the sponge every 3 months. But in my experience, that's not been remotely necessary as long as you rinse it off periodically. There's really... also, if you have more than one sponge, you can put two sponges in there and rinse one off, you know, one time you do maintenance on the tank, and then rinse the other off the other time, and then you're not destroying all the beneficial bacteria. But like I said, in the goldfish tank we have one of each, and if I need to, I feel like I can rinse off all the media in the AquaClear filter, and because I've got the bio-wheel in the other one, and so we're fine. I don't have to worry about killing off all the bacteria. Because a lot of bacteria are going to be growing on that wheel as long as it's spinning well and got the oxygen going. It's going to be a preferential spot for bacteria because of all the oxygen available. So that's something I feel like you can mix them and you get the best of both worlds, so to speak. You're running it for African cichlids, so you don't have to worry about CO2 and plants and things like that so much. I would just say... You know, you can go either way, but hopefully the ideas that I just talked about, advantages and disadvantages of particular filters, will help you make your choice, but I think you could do well either way. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Should we move on to North Carolina?
Yeah. This is just a really quick one.
Yeah, this is just a little note from Sean in Asheville, North Carolina. And, you know, we were joking about Scooby-Doo last week, and Russ did his Scooby-Doo laugh. You're going to do it again.
Oh, no, that's okay.
I was like, Mufasa, do it again. And Sean just wrote it and says, thanks for the excellent Scooby-Doo impression.
Well, I'm glad it made a positive impression. I hadn't really contemplated it or premeditated it, so it
no premeditated came out the way Scooby-Doo,
it came huh? out. I don't know.
It was pretty good. Okay, and then we heard from Mick.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh, and we got his package.
Mm-hmm. Which I think we talked about last week.
We did a bit. Did we? Yeah.
Yeah, the book.
Yeah, We did in the book. But you know, we still haven't done the picture with the t-shirts. We have to do that this week. We were going to do that, but
all kinds of things have been cropping up. It's been a little nuts lately.
It's been a little crazy. Yeah, but that's something we need to do.
We'll get a picture.
Yeah.
But this is Monday when we're recording this, so we can get a picture by Wednesday.
Oh, that's true.
You're off of work this week, so
yeah,
we should.
So maybe I can do that.
30 seconds to take a picture. Okay. So Mick says he just got the green light to turn the spare room into a fish and animal room at home.
Yay!
So Tony, you and Mick are like both making your fish rooms.
Same vibe.
Mm-hmm. And can I? Do I get to talk about this?
Oh well, yeah, we can say something. We're working on it.
Yeah,
it's just we're working on a project with Mick for an interview show with him. Hopefully soon, mm-hmm. when we can work out a date that is, you know, that works for all of us. So we'll tell you more about that when it comes.
That will be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and last but not least, we have something fun from Tony.
Yeah.
He says, my contribution for the week, how I created a drainage bin for the fish room. Worth mentioning that this worked best after I added some silicone to further seal it. Silicone 1 from GE is what I use for all fish-related applications. Silicone 2 has added fungicides, which you wouldn't want in the water. And he sent it as a video.
Which we will post.
Nice and detailed, and explanations, and parts used, and tools, and everything.
Yeah, one thing that I like is that you could replicate it yourself after watching Tony's video.
Yeah.
Because he explains everything.
He says exactly the same, what kind of parts he used.
And he puts it on camera so you can read it too and make mm-hmm. sure you know what everything is. He shows the process of building it. He shows it working out. It's replicable. I like that.
It's scientific.
Yeah. In that sense it is, because mm-hmm. anybody with access to the same parts would be able to replicate what Tony's done.
Mm-hmm.
So
we will put that up, and you guys can go and enjoy it. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's fun watching the fish room come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Fishition? I don't know. That probably doesn't work.
I don't know. It sounds kind of like physician, like doctor.
Well, fish are healing, right?
True. You know, this is kind of backtracking, but, you know, Mick said that he got the green light to turn the spare room into a fish and animal room.
Mm-hmm.
We got to visit an animal room the other day.
Totally talk about that,
yeah.
Huh?
It was really fun. We were picking up a vivarium for Kelly's crested gecko.
She needed a big one now. She's getting bigger.
She's getting bigger. And we looked on the local classifieds to find one that was cheaper, because they can be quite expensive. And we responded to a posting and worked out a time to go look at it. And when we got there, we walked into this room, and it was this lady was a veterinary technician, and she was also qualified to train veterinary technicians.
She had her own school that she taught at.
Yeah. And she had this room that was full of
critters.
Lots of critters that she used to help train. They were her pets, but she also used them to help train and work in this class. And apparently she had horses and llamas and dogs and cats and... In the room, there was a cat, but there were also two large sulcata tortoises. There were
like
rats.
Just free range in the room,
there were
walking around.
Guinea pigs. There were
cockatiels. Skinks.
Skinks. She had
crested geckos.
Solomon Island skink.
Yeah.
She had crested geckos. She had dart frogs. She had all kinds of things. So it was fun.
What was the? She had lizards in a tank on the floor that you said
were kind
of agamid.
They were agamids of some kind, but she didn't say exactly
what
they were.
She didn't specify what they were.
Oh, but they were interesting.
And a cat with about a third of a tail.
Yeah.
Who was very friendly.
So that was fun.
Mm-hmm. But it was fun to go and see all the critters.
Yeah.
That she had. It was kind of like going to the zoo.
Yeah, it really was. It was a mini zoo.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, back to Tony, what he said about his fish room. I mean, I'm really excited to see how this comes out and how... What Tony ends up doing with it, and it's fun to watch the video and instructive.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you check that out? We'll have it posted on our page, probably on our Facebook as well.
And Tony, hopefully we can look forward to more projects from you so we can all learn from them.
Yeah, it's really fun. Oh, there were a couple other things from YouTube. We had listeners or contributors from YouTube that were interesting. We had someone who was asking how I kept mosquitoes from breeding in my Daphnia cultures.
Well, right now, they're inside.
Yes, right now so the Daphnia culture is inside, and that helps. But there's something else, too, because he was responding to the bucket video. Like Daphnia in a bucket.
Didn't you have a screen over them? They couldn't get in?
I did have a screen, but the screen was actually not mosquito-proof.
Oh, okay.
But what I did have that helped proof it from mosquitoes, so I never had any issues with mosquitoes when they were outside, is aeration.
Oh, do they not like move
as long as you have enough water movement, mosquitoes don't really breed in it. So I never had that issue.
I guess they can't really lay eggs in it if it's like a tsunami for them, huh?
Right, if it's all turbulent, it's really hard for them to stay still and lay their eggs. And also the environment that they prefer in terms of larvae is not, stagnant water is what they prefer. So if you've got the water moving, they're not likely to be interested in it.
That's
good. It never was an issue. Also, Daphnia actually compete with mosquito larvae for food. So they might even have been out-competed if... I don't know. I mean, they coexist in other bodies of water, so I don't know. But it's the aeration that seems to do it. Never had an issue with mosquitoes. I did get bloodworms once or twice, it seems
really?
To me.
How'd they get in there?
I guess they don't care about aeration as much as mosquitoes do. But not very often. But the bloodworms are not an issue either. They're just more fish food.
Right.
So that was never an issue. I've said issue way too many times. Please remind me not to say issue anymore.
Okay, don't you just said it again.
Oh, I did? Okay, yeah. Sorry. That's one of the issues that I have to work.
Just say problem.
Okay. And another one.
Or you could say obstacle.
Obstacle, there you go. Something to surmount.
See? Oh, surmount. That's a good one.
Well, this is something that I would like to mention too, is that I have a listener who mentioned just recently, and when was this? This was sometime this week, I guess that doesn't matter, but posted on my video on springtails. And springtails are, of course, a good food for fish, and I posted this video. I've made a chapter in my book about springtails and so on. And so, as the best I could tell prior to this message was that, and I wasn't sure about it, but anyway.
That's the Daphnia one.
I thought that the species that I had was Fulsomia candida. And on the video, that's what I said. But this listener has a pretty compelling bit of evidence that the species that I had was not Fulsomia candida. Okay? And so I checked it out. And I think the listener, or the watcher, or whatever, is
YouTube
right.
Commentator.
Mm-hmm. And the species, the commenter on YouTube is, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's like...
Limede 45.
Yep. If it were Portuguese, it would be like Limeji 45. But
well, let's do that.
I don't know what the...
Let's call him Limeji.
Which language it is. But it says, this isn't Fulsomia candida. I've been researching and found them to be very similar to Cinella curviceta. And when I looked very carefully at Google images of both, which, and this probably led to my confusion, if you look up Fulsomia candida, you will find some that are apparently mislabeled and look a lot like mine. But I agree. I think they look a lot more, in general, like Cinella curviceta rather than Fulsomia candida. So, I'm glad to know that.
But both of those are under the common name of springtail, and they fill the same role in, like, naturalistic vivariums? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Yeah, they're both springtails, and they both... there are many, many, many species of springtail. But they're both white springtails. They're both apparently temperate springtails, as far as I can tell. And so, hence my confusion, they're all quite tiny. But one thing that is interesting is that the species that I have has a very hairy patch on its back. And they're more, I guess, almost like an almond-shaped body.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Fulsomia candida have a longer body and they don't seem to have...
They look more segmented.
A hairy thorax.
A little glowworm.
Yeah, there's this hairy thorax thing going on that they seem to threaten each other with, actually.
Interesting.
In the species I have. So, interesting to know that. I ended up putting a note on my YouTube channel, an annotation, so someone watches
on the
that
video.
Where it says Fulsomia candida in the video. Now it says this species may actually be Sinellia cruziata. So that's fixed. And I think that's about all we've got for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
So thank you to all of the contributors who contributed and who
all you contributors who didn't contribute.
We'd like to thank you, and yes, we will in the future when you contribute. So there you go. But we thank you for listening anyway, because that's important too.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have a show if we didn't have listeners, or if we did, it would be a very lonely one.
It would.
So thank you all for joining us in whatever capacity you are joining us in.
May the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.